Well, I'd like to come forward. Born June the 25th. You got this one?
Yes, ma'am.
Born June the 25th, 1888.
And where were you born?
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland.
You keep talking.
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and I started to work in the clothing industry when my father had a small tailor shop, and I learned some of the work. And after my father had gave up the clothing industry, after my brother's death, then I went to work at Strauss Brothers at the age of, I don't know just what age, but it was in 1914.
Did you have any schooling, ma'am?
Yes, I did. I went to school. I went through the sixth grade, and then I studied on the side. I was often called to the Catholic University in Washington to address the students on the three major industries such as steel, coal, and iron, and they were very much interested, and they always seemed to treat me very nice. I stayed overnight, and they were very lovely
what
to me.
That have been?
And
when would that have been?
Yes, my father. That could be about 25 years ago.
Oh, that was more recent.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about your mother and father.
Mm-hmm. Well, my mother was a housewife, and my father, he got a small job working in a clothing industry. But it was then during the Depression, the pay was so small, $10 a week, and my father wasn't well, so I made my father stop working for $10 a week. And my sister, she worked, and then after my mother wasn't feeling well either, neither was my father, so I had to have somebody to stay home with my people. So my brother, one was married, and the other one was still single, going to school and college. And,
can we go back a little earlier? Did your family come from Italy?
No, we are not Italian. My father and mother, by race, is Czech.
Oh.
We are Czech. And my father could speak English fluently, and so could my mother.
When did they come over from Czechoslovakia?
They came at an early age of 16 and 14 years. They even attended school. And my father lived to the age of 81 years old, and my mother had died at the age of 80. And there were 8 children in the family, of which I am the oldest. Now there are only 3 living: myself and my sister Barbara and my brother Edward, who is married. My people had owned this house. They built us the house. And of course, my sister took sick. She has a heart ailment. And she just can't run around and do as she would like. She can't eat all kinds of food. She can't even drink some coffee. She only can have Santa or another that has caffeine in it.
But tell me more about your childhood years first, before we get into the later period.
In my childhood years, and my father was a tailor, and he used to make custom work, and he made coats, dress coats. And some of them paid $15, and some of them
$10,
and tuxedo coats and sock coats. And mother used to sell all the linings very nicely, and it's being recorded, Bob, and when you talk, she gets it in the recorder, so keep quiet. So Mother would sell the face in, and it looked like it was pasted on. And our mother would help Daddy. We had to help around the house with the 8 children, and I being the oldest, and you had to always be first set to go places. So when my father finished those coats, I had to go work at home at the shop. I had to take them to the store, to the merchant tailor store. And then he would pay my father for them. Sometimes I collected $40 because you couldn't make many of those coats. You could probably make 1.5 because it's almost all hand work. See?
How long did it take to make 1.5?
A whole week. Mm-hmm. And then most you could make was 2. And then I would take him to the store, and I would go sometimes late Saturday night to deliver these because there was too much work on it. And especially in busy season when these young men wanted to go down to Bermuda and Palm Beach and they needed their clothes, so they just waited. Sometimes they even came Sunday morning to the house to get the clothes.
And your father had his shop set up right in the house?
Yes, he had it next to whom?
Did anyone work for him? Or did
no, just the mother and him. And I helped him if I got up. And so mother used to be so afraid that coming home 10 o'clock and getting off the bus that something would happen to me. So my poor mother used to wait on the corner where I would get off and meet me to bring me home. And I came home, and then we sat down and we had a little luncheon, and mother would talk, and my father asked me what the boss said, and I told him that what he said, that he had 2 more that he's going to send out to them and that he'd like to have them as soon as possible and so forth and so on.
Yeah, did you make these for just one particular shop, or
he made it for Mr. Gitt, and he lived was it Pennsylvania Avenue and Moses Street, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Moses Street. There, for Mr. Gitt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how, and he went into business for himself. And my brother was sent my brother to the cutting school, and my father made the suit to order, merchant tailor store. And that was on Monument Street. And unfortunately, my brother also used to work at Strauss & Brothers, and he used to cut this blue serge material. And the fuzz got into his nose and his nostrils, and he didn't want my father to know about it because my father went in debt to set that stuff up. So he didn't want to worry his dad, so he wouldn't tell him that he was sick. And he would go to the doctor, and the doctor would drill his nose with something, and mother would know that something is wrong, because when he would come to her or sister, she would smell that it smelled like alcohol or something. And then my father used to come to my mother and say to her, "Mary, what's the matter with James? Something's wrong with him. He looks bad, and he smells like he drinks something, and he doesn't drink, and I don't know what it is." So it kept on for a little while, a few days, and mother just couldn't stand it. So she got a hold of my brother, and she told James and asked him what was wrong. And he told her that the doctor is speaking his throat, and that he isn't doing him any good, that if anything, he's worse. So my mother told Daddy about it, and then my father took him to another doctor, a specialist, and he said that it's too bad that he developed 2 holes right in his chest, and he doesn't know what he can do for him. He was 25 years old, engaged to be married, and he died in December. He went to bed Thanksgiving Day, and December the 23rd, he died. And then my father...
What year was that?
He told my brother he was dead now quite a while. Jane says back 40 years.
This is before you started working in the shop then?
No, I worked in a shop then. I worked 45 years for the Bible.
Well, when did you first work with your mother and father then, helping them?
I first started, and then I went to work in spouses.
When did you begin there?
Spouses, I was about 16.
Now that, you were 16, so that was very early. That would be like 1904 or something.
Yes, before the Burma fire. That's the Burma fire. I was 15 in Burma fire. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1972, I think, or 76. I don't remember anymore.
Well, how did you get your first job? Do you recall?
Yes, I just went up there. I went to a friend of mine to teach me how to make hand buttonholes. And she taught me how to make hand buttonholes. And I started to work in this young union shop at Stouts and Brothers, employing about, I can say over 1,500 people. And I learned how to make buttonholes, and I got a job there as a buttonhole maker. And understanding the situation of my union shop and understanding the situation of my father, when he was busy, he could get his desk coats, and when it wasn't busy, he had to take a coat for $2, or $2.50, and he had to make them. But when the weather changed and he got the better ones, he would have been foolish to finish those others. So he sent them back to the man, and the man was mad, and it was a different employer than who had the good work.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So that's how it worked. And my brother was dead, and then after a while, he turned the store into general merchandise. Mm-hmm. And he was wearing apparel.
But you were still working at Stouts the whole time?
No, I was working for the Amalgamated. I think I started to work for Amalgamated in 1914, when they had to fight.
Okay. Why don't we talk about your working career then? You started working in about 10 years before that, though, in a non-union shop.
Yes.
Now, were any of the shops in Baltimore organized by the garment workers at that time?
No, I don't think fully. There was Sonneborn's, and there was a New York clothing house. None of them were organized. So Darcy Belanta and myself, we used to go out on a Sunday afternoon and go and rap at people's doors that worked in Strassen Brothers, where I worked, and also in the other shops, and ask them and tell them what the union meant. Well, we were received very nicely by most people, I was.
Mm-hmm.
But in some places where there was a lot of Gentile people, they were anti-Jewish, so Dorothy used to stand outside, and she used to say to me, if I hear any noise, I'll come in. But you stay outside. But nobody never bothered me.
Well, how did you first learn about the union yourself?
I heard it. My father belonged to the Knights of Labor. And my father knew, and he used to discuss it. And I used to see how my father had to go to work and take the cheap work in order that we could live. And then after that, when he could make more money, he threw that out and sent it back, and he took the good work. And then he went into business for himself. He then came the depression. My father was sick. He worked for $10 a week. And I made my father stop and come home. And my mother was home. And then my father died with a heart attack. And my sister had stayed with my mother. And her mother and I worked. And I had to help to support my people.
So you first learned about the idea of unionism then through your father.
Yes.
And then how did you first come to know about the United Garment Workers? Did you know about them before the
United Garment Workers? You mean the CIO?
No. Before the split of the amalgamate, before the amalgamated split off from the United Garment Workers.
Did you know about them before? Yeah. Because the Darcy Belanta, it was decided who's going to go to the convention, when they had their convention. And then that was held in Springfield. And I think it was in Springfield. And so Darcy went.
Did he have formed, you mean?
Huh?
Was that the year the novel was formed in 1915?
Yeah.
Well, where did you meet Dorothy?
In the meetings. Union meetings, I used to go.
Oh, well, that's what I asked. When did you first start going to the union meetings?
When I was 14 or 15. And it's got Progressive Hall.
Oh, and well, tell me about those. And that's how I know how you first started.
And Darcy was there. And Pauline Levison. Sadie Dresner. And another girl, what was her name? She's this little girl. I can't think of her name just now. But she was there too.
And
we used to have meetings, and then of course I've learned buttonholes, and I already was working in Strauss and Douglas as buttonhole makers. Then the war came on, and I was a chairlady in that department. And we had these great big ulsters, what the soldiers wore, these overcoats, and putting hand buttonholes in them, and that material that everybody's fingers were split like that, and get that close to in them. That was no fun, no matter if they gave us 10 cents or 7 cents a buttonhole. Who cared? Our fingers was more value than that. So I went to work, and I used to, and Mr. Strauss, the owner of the Strauss and Billy, he somehow had confidence in me, because I never went to any manufacturer in my life just think that I'm going to tell him something to trick him, because I know he would wake up next day, and I had a deal with him, and he knew that I was a traitor. I will never do that. But I did go, and I stuck to my guns when I was right, and I showed them that I was right. So I went, and I took the phone. We had impartial chairman. Des Moses was our impartial chairman. We had a board of trade, which I was on. He used to come every week, take up different things in collective bargaining, they used to call. So I went and picked up the telephone, and I asked to see Mr. Strauss. And he says, "Mamie, all right, come down. What is on your mind?" And I came down. And he said, "Well, we look into that." Then after that, they forgot about it. And we had a foreman. I don't like to mention names, though.
So. Oh, well,
we had a foreman. Mm-hmm. And this foreman, he says, "If you don't want to make those buttonholes in those coats, well, get the hell out of here." So I came upstairs, being quite young, about 15 years old. I started to shake. And I took one girl with me, Margaret. And Margaret was shaking too. And the girls, What did he say? He told us to get the hell out. So when he told us to get the hell out, we said, "Ain't the first time we can take a walk." And we all got up and we walked out. And when we walked, Lord Hems, of course the tailors all got a cut of 10% at that time. So all the tailors and all the floors and everybody was out on strike. And when they were out on the strike, by the women, some women, social workers, some, they picked me up bodily and they carried me around up in the press, in the hall there and everything, and they said, "Never mind, this will be settled." That's fine. So then we were walking up and down the picket line, and this man, the owner of that building, Mr. Strauss, who was a lovely man, an employer, but he was a good man to deal with. And he called me over and he asked me what was wrong. I said, "I mentioned it to you." He says, "Was not taken care of yet?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, I like to settle this. That is just terrible. I hate to see you walking up and down here." And I carried a pipe. If a scab wanted to hit me, I was going to use the pipe wrapped up. And a policeman, somebody blowed on me, and he was going to arrest me for carrying an unsealed weapon. So Mr. Strauss wouldn't let him take me. He said she would never use it and forget about it. So he took this pipe away from me. Let's see. But then Mr. Strauss then and he said he'd like to meet the committee and settle with us. And I said, "Oh no, we're not going to settle now just for us. You have cut all them other people 10%, and that is wrong, and you're going to take us back and give us a raise on our work, and on their work you have cut them instead of giving back to them what you took away. Now, I don't think that's fair." And he said, "Well," he says, "we'll see. So who should we get?" So I think at that time, I don't know whether, I think Bloomberg was already in as a manager. and if you could call it district council, I think, but I'm not quite sure, but I think that it does
if
from
you
that.
Were only 16, it would have only been about 1904. It would be before the amalgamated was formed.
I was down there in 1914.
So you would have been...
I was 45 years.
1914. You would have been 26 years old then, during all that.
Yeah, oh mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah, 26 is right, yeah. And when I was 20, I was member of the board.
Now, what board would that have been?
The national board.
Of what union?
Amalgamated Clothing Workers.
Well, that would be before the amalgamated, though. They didn't form until
1914. And 1920, I was a member of the board. I was elected in Boston.
1920. I thought you said when you were 20 years old.
No, then it was born.
Right.
In 1920, I was a member, a vice president of the General Executive Board. I was nominated and then through a referendum in Boston, Massachusetts, and then through a referendum vote, I was elected.
Mm-hmm.
And I served about 13 years. I could have served longer, but after organizing Philadelphia, it was quite a job. With Sidney Hillman and mm-hmm. some of the New York Chicago mm-hmm. boys.
Okay, well, let's backtrack a little again. I just wanted to get some dates straight, because you were saying you were 16 and that confused me.
I can't tell you dates and things. Just get that in my mind.
Yeah.
I forget.
Well, during this, you had already been going down to the Union Hall and had met Dorothy.
Oh, yeah, before we organized the shop.
Mm-hmm. So when you went to him, did you go with the intention of having him recognize the union?
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. We had a union done already.
We did have
a union. Oh, we done it like soldiers, all of us.
How did you get the desktop organized?
Because we walked out.
Mm-hmm.
The buttonhole makers walked out.
And that's what led to the formation of,
yes, of a union.
And was that a preferential shop or a closed shop?
Closed shop.
It was a closed shop.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Closed shop, absolutely.
Because I know in Chicago, they first started with preferential shops. Right?
No, we had a closed shop agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Bloomberg was in charge, and he's coming every day almost, or three times a week, and he was fine. I like Bloomberg a lot, and like his wife and family. And in fact, I like all the union officials that I worked with, every one of them. Some of them are dead. Mr. Schlossberg, mm-hmm. I like him, and I like Rosenblum. I like Sala. I like all those men, Krisky, all the men I worked with. I was only one woman. I'll show you the picture. I was a general executive board. I have it up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And then the reason why I gave up that seat, I would have been elected again, but I was told that he wanted the job in Chicago, wanted a man there, and they really place the money in it, and it was an honor to be a member of the General Executive Board, but it wasn't any more pay. It was the same pay, even if I was, and only had probably a little more privileges.
Mm-hmm.
But what privilege did I have? I didn't sit in New York office like some of the members mm-hmm. of the General Executive Board. I was a member of the General Executive Board, but I had to go in different towns to organize, unorganize, and find offices and get secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
And go to people and get different people to help me. I went to the Catholic Charities in Connecticut, and I got Miss Newman and several of them women to help me to the Catholic Church. Then I went to the Catholic University, and they helped me to find certain
mm-hmm.
people. Then the National Office knew some people,
mm-hmm.
so they told me where to go. And I worked for them up in New England. I was about 9 or 10 years in Bridgeport, in Connecticut, and the vicinity around there for about 10 years. And Cursey was the manager, and of course, and John Lawyer. And I had to help and work along with them. But I used to be the main one almost to get things from the employer. Somehow or other, I felt very funny myself
mm-hmm.
that I took to the employees. But I wouldn't let them get away with murder.
Well, tell me, before you got onto the General Executive Board, after Strauss was organized, How many other shops in Baltimore? Did you then organize the rest of the shops in Baltimore?
No, I did not. I didn't organize none of them. I was out of work for quite a while, and being a member of the General Executive Board, Hillman was in town, and he sent for me. And I had a job somewhere else, and he didn't like it a bit. He said, "Why didn't I come to me? Why didn't you come to me?" I said, "Well, I thought that Mr. Bloomberg knew." He said, "Never mind about Mr. Bloomberg," he said, "you should have came to me. What they can pay you, I can pay you." And he put me on the national payroll or the general office for $40 a week. And I was assigned as secretary and treasurer to the Baltimore Joint Board on Caroline Street and Baltimore. And I was there working with Amelia Kennedy. Of course, I wasn't the smartest one, but Amelia Kennedy was a former teacher. And working with her, we got along lovely together. And during that time, I studied. I got a scholarship for women in industry. I went to Hopkins. I took up labor management under Gordon Smith Mitchell. Well, that could have been in 1921 and 1922.
Now, you worked at Strauss until you were out of work, is that it?
Until they went out of business, they closed down. After the war, lost a lot of money, and they had thought the war would last, and they lost millions and millions of dollars because they bought so much cloth, and I don't know how much they paid for it, and then down $9 or $10 a yard, and after the war, the sum came, and I think it was only worth about $3 or $2.
Now, when you first started at Strauss, how much money were you earning when you first began? Do you recall?
At Strauss. As a buttonhole maker, I seldom worked on buttonholes. When I worked on buttonholes, I used to make, at that time, well, without the union, we could get 3 cents a buttonhole. And I could make 4 buttonholes in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, see, that's 12. And then you could figure out how much I used to make, maybe 18, something like that, or dollars.
And
then when the union came in, of course, we got a raise, and then I made a little more. But being a chairlady and being on the Wage and Trade Board, giving a lot of time to this work, not putting in my expenses, then as time went on, sometimes it was quite a lot, I would take the local joint board working here. They would give me money for my lost time.
What local did you belong to?
A local 61, I think. Yeah, I think local 16 or local 15.
That was Clothmakers?
No, Buttonhole Makers local. I forget the name of it. It's been so long, and they dissolved too, see.
When did you become chairlady in your shop? Was it for the floor or for the whole?
I was for the whole building.
Mm-hmm.
I was a member of the board and a chairman of the whole building, and Sam Baston was the chairman too.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, somehow or other, I was the one. I've done a whole lot of the work, you know. I'll just give you an instance if you put this off.
Okay.
That I got a lot of things that would come up in the shop that
mm-hmm.
had to be done.
What kind of things?
Yeah, the girls girls had to be a board of trade. Now, girls used to do the selling. And I understand coats because I worked with Dad at home. I know what a full-line coat is. I know what a half-line coat is. I know what a quarter-line coat is. So they wanted to pay the girls for a half-line coat same price as they pay for the other one going this way. And the girls themselves came to me, and I knew that they were justified to get more money. And they wouldn't give it to them. So we had a board of trade, and we had Mr. Strauss there. And all of them sat there, even Mr. Strauss, and I'm saying, "Mom." And they didn't want to give them nothing. All the committee was there. Didn't want to give them gold a cent. And I said, "Mr. Strauss, I never came to anybody asking for anything if I thought that I was cheating. Look, there's Mr. Bulberry downstairs, your designer. Now, I'd like to have Mr. Bill Berry come up here and look me in the face and tell me that there is more work on a half-line coat than there is a full-line. If he tells me that it's just the same, I close the argument. I warned Mr. Bill Berry here. He looked. He says, "Well, good, Bill Berry." So he got Mr. Bill Berry, this Italian man, and says, "Mr. Bill Berry, we got something to present to you." And then Judge Moses at that time was arbitrator, he's there now, he said it, and he says, "I'd rather have Miss Santora to say it." So I went to work and I said, "Mr. Bill Berry, the reason I sent for you, I'm sorry I got to take your work, but I just want to know, out of your goodness, to tell these gentlemen here on this board, is there more work on a full-line coat, or is it just as much on the full line as it is on a half line? I claim that a half line coat has got much more work on it. You have to go around the pieces. You got to come down to the two sides. You got to put in here. You have your slit. You got to go across the slit halfway. Now, is there more work on a half line coat than there is on a full line, or isn't it?" He says, "You've got me on the spot. Of course! It's more work on a half-line coat. Of course!" Judge ruled, 2 cents more.
Now, was this, you took it as the tailor, you took it to the pay board, was that it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Both pay.
But you did this in your role as tailor, that the girl came to you to talk to you about it.
Oh, yes. See, I had charge of all the stores.
Now, it didn't go to the business agent first and then to the pay board, it went right to the pay board?
We didn't have no business agent. We had the chairman of the shop, and we had the pay board,
then
Bloomberg come. We had no business agents. We had none of that kind of stuff. Only these little butcher shops that I call the small shops. They have this one pen shop, and this one for this one, and this one for this one. I have 5 men, and all 5 of them there. We didn't have none.
You would go, when there was a complaint, and someone would come to you.
I had my own bell. And when the firm wanted me, or any other firm, I had to get off my chair. My bell rang for me. I had 3 bells. I went downstairs. And I lost a lot of money.
What that usually meant that a worker was complaining to the foreman and was calling for you, is that it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, then what would be the next step, maybe? Was there any step before you went to the joint board?
I would talk to the girls, and they would show me. And if I thought they were wrong, I would tell them, "You're wrong." Now, I can't hold a gun up for them just for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about them? I said, I'm sorry. I can't do that.
Now, if you thought they were right, you would then go to Mr. Stiles.
Then I thought that they were right, we would have a meeting with all the committee together. And I'd present their case. See, it was fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all knew what was going, not only me and the girl. They all knew what was going on every floor, where they make pants, where they make vests, and where they make coats.
Oh, so there'd be a chairman and a chairlady from every floor.
Floor, yes.
And you would all meet.
Yes, and I was all in the head.
Uh-huh. I see.
Yeah. That's how.
Because it worked differently in Chicago with, like, how Seth and Martin had the business agents coming in.
Yeah, but we don't have none.
And that was true all along the way. There never were business agents then in the Baltimore local?
In the smaller shops, but not in the big shops. Mm-hmm. You never had no business agent. Bloomberg would come in. I called up Bloomberg, he'd come in. He was the manager. He didn't bother us, and I bought it with the man on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've done a lot of work in my life.
Now,
and 19 years up in Massachusetts.
Now, let's try and get it in sequence. And then you lost, then the shop closed down.
Yeah.
But by that time, were you on the joint board in Baltimore?
In Baltimore, on the joint board, when they closed down, well, there was no more. I belonged to the union, yes.
But you weren't on the joint board in Baltimore?
Oh, yes, I was. I was on the board all the time. I was a vice president. I was elected in 1920 in Boston.
No, I don't mean the general executive board, but the joint board in Baltimore.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. But none of them seemed to, there were so many people thrown on the street, but everybody fixed for themselves and didn't care. And the boss wouldn't take me. in this chapter were saying to me, because they thought that I knew the union and they didn't want to take me. And so finally I did land in a shop in Epstein, and I worked there and I didn't like it at all, and I took a lot of things so long, I couldn't do nothing about it. And
that was a non-union shop?
It was supposed to be union, but that time union didn't have the rate anymore, and so I don't know how it went in. And then after that, I worked in the office, Hillman sent for me, and he put me in a Baltimore office. And of course, I knew something about books. I knew how to enter, and I knew how to count, and I knew a lot of those things that I was capable of doing. And then we had a double ledger, which I really didn't know too much about, but Miss Kennedy showed me debit and a credit side, and I caught on real quick. See, and then I studied. I studied all along, every city that I was. Even when I was in Massachusetts, I went to Holy Cross at nighttime. And I didn't only take Mamie. I took 5 cars, the girls and boys, that they should know what the union is, because Mamie wasn't going to stay there forever.
Now, this is when you were already on the panel, just before that you were working in the Baltimore office now.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes.
Now, you said that you went in 1914, you went to the convention when you amalgamated.
I didn't go to the convention. I stayed home, and I held the fort. And then Dorothy came back from the convention, which was held, and they broke off, and the tailors started their own union, the Amalgamated Clothing Workers. Mm-hmm. And of course they brought Hillman in, and Hillman really, he wasn't what he was Hillman later. You know, he had an accent, and then another thing is he wasn't really explicit, but then it was marvelous. And I really like Hillman. I love Hillman. I really and truly do. And he certainly liked me a lot, and I like his wife Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
I really and truly do. They were my best of friends.
Now, how about, what was your relationship like with Dorothy
Belanca? With Dorothy Belanca? Well, she went to school. She was doing organization work. And from the Progressive Hall and from the Buttonhole Maker, she was a Buttonhole Maker. And a Leveson girl. I forgot her name before, mm-hmm. Leveson girl, and
Did you know Dorothy in the shop?
Oh, yeah, she used to sit in the alley on one stone, and I sat on the other stone, and we used to discuss union matters, Dorothy and I. Yes, indeed. I love Dorothy. And Aldis used to come in. I can see him at his bow tie flying, you know, and I always used to be afraid of him, and he knew it. And when Dorothy told me she married him, I said, oh, I'm so sorry you're not yet married. So she told August. And then when I came to see them, he said, you think that I'm no good man, huh? He says, I got a wife, she's an angel. Yeah, she said, how much money you want? Go out and buy something. Go outside. Give him money. And it was real nice to her, and she was real nice to him. They were lovely people. I have no complaint to make, and I want that to be sure. I have no complaint to make against our national office. So all the years that I was with them, I worked hard, it's true. I gave them best that was in